Welcome to the Weekly Digest from Personalized Intelligence. It's Thursday, April 9th, and this is our AI edition, packed with everything you need to know about the accelerating world of artificial intelligence. I'm Maya.
And I'm Alex. We've been digging deep this week, trying to make sense of a landscape that's changing hourly. Honestly, it feels a little like trying to decrypt a constantly shifting Enigma code. You solve one piece and three more appear.
You and your analogies. But seriously, let's cut to it. First up, AI development, context, automation, and user experience. Are we building tools that understand us or just incredibly convincing parrots?
A crucial question. Then we're tackling AI security and proactive risk management. Because ignoring the vulnerabilities now, well, that's just asking for trouble.
Speaking of trouble, Alex has been obsessing over AI agents and the new financial infrastructure they're creating. What have you unearthed?
It's more than just fintech, Maya. It's a fundamental rethink of trust. And speaking of rethinks, did you know the cost of training a single advanced AI model can now exceed the GDP of some small nations?
No way. All right, you've officially piqued my interest. We'll unpack that and then we're diving into advanced AI models, mythos, and yes, their surprisingly common vulnerabilities. Buckle up. ServiceNow is managing 80 billion workflows. 80 billion. That number feels less like a business metric and more like a sci-fi world-building detail. Let's talk about what's happening inside those workflows, AI development, specifically context, automation, and user experience. Why is this suddenly the most important battleground?
It's the shift from possibility to practicality. For years, AI, especially LLMs, demonstrated impressive raw capability. Now the challenge is integration, making those capabilities consistently useful in everyday work. The companies that can seamlessly embed AI into existing processes, understand user intent, and deliver reliable outcomes will define the next wave of productivity gains.
Reliable being the operative word. OpenClaw produced 1 million lines of code with zero human input. Impressive, but how much of that code actually worked without a team dedicated to observability and error identification?
That's precisely the point. Ryan Lapapolo highlighted that the bottleneck has shifted. We've solved the coding problem, now it's about human oversight. The team at OpenAI Frontier is building tools like Symfony to remove engineers from the terminal, automating workflows. But crucially, they're realizing it requires a skill-based approach to agent consistency. It isn't about eliminating humans, it's about shifting their focus to higher-level architectural guidance.
Skill-based approach to agent consistency. That's a wonderfully bureaucratic way of saying making sure the robots don't break everything. And it points to a bigger issue: deep contextual AI is still incredibly hard. Granola's Sam Stephenson calls it a major barrier because of access to and consolidation of user data.
The need for a context-as-a-service solution is significant. Andrew Critch built his own personal database, recognizing that the AI needs information about your work, notes, calendar data, emails to be truly helpful. But that's unsustainable for most users. Granola is strategically specializing, building on top of foundational models like Claude and GPT, precisely to avoid competing directly on the raw model side and focus on this contextual layer.
So less building the brain, more building the memory. And the personality. Because that's what makes or breaks an AI assistant. Critch uses the analogy of humans I would be interacting with, which is remarkably accurate. Access control, privacy, it's not just about the tech, it's about establishing appropriate boundaries.
That's a critical framing. It's about understanding the appropriate scope of access. Stephenson's concept of forgetfulness as a safety mechanism, a decaying memory to prevent misuse of sensitive data, is a novel approach to information security in agentic AI. It parallels the expectations we have for human assistants. They need information to function, but not unlimited access.
Okay, but what happens when the AI isn't remembering enough? Granola prioritizes designing for users at peak cognitive load, running from back-to-back meetings, which means simplicity is paramount. They deliberately reduce features to avoid overwhelm. That feels counterintuitive in a world obsessed with feature bloat.
It's a rejection of the traditional UI expectation of a thoughtful, deliberate user. They're embracing system one thinking, reactive, intuitive interaction, because they recognize that users aren't in a rational state of mind when they need help most. Stephenson's team calibrates expectations about complex interfaces, which challenges the assumption that software should be approached with careful planning.
This makes me think of the OXO principle: designing for extreme users yields broader usability. If it works for someone stressed and overwhelmed, it works for everyone. And Granola's viral growth is fueled by shareable notes, recipes for repeatable actions. That's not accidental.
No, it's intentional feature design. The recipes feature is critical for both organic growth and internal productivity, job description creation, for example. It unlocks inherent viral loops within the core functionality, as Stephenson puts it, but it took time to materialize. It's a lesson in building a product with network effects, not just a functional tool.
So stop trying to solve every problem and focus on the one thing people will share with their coworkers. That's surprisingly sensible. But even shareable notes require accurate user testing. Granola focuses on observing users in their natural work environments, prioritizing qualitative feedback.
The implication runs deeper. Stephenson prioritizes observing users with existing notes and calendar data, reversing the typical approach of relying on user narratives. He finds that self-reported behavior differs significantly from real-world actions. Dogfooding, observing teammates using the product in the wild, delivers more reliable insights than structured interviews.
Vibe coding, as they call it, prototyping in code, then refining the UI with Figma. It's a complete reversal of the traditional design workflow. Figma becomes a specialist tool, not the entire design process.
It's an iterative loop between code and targeted mockups. That rapid prototyping creates a new form of closure, as Stephenson explains. Quickly building and testing ideas internally provides a clear signal of whether something is obvious and worth pursuing, reducing the discouragement of rejected concepts.
Okay, so we're building simpler AI tools that understand more context, powered by faster iteration observed in the wild. What about the cost? The unlimited inference budget feels unsustainable.
Stephenson acknowledges that the current model may be a growth phase strategy reminiscent of Uber's early approach, prioritizing user experience over immediate profitability. But deep contextual analysis, using multiple transcripts per query, quickly drives up costs, potentially exceeding $1 a PI call. Critch's database build illustrates the potential, but highlights the impracticality for most users.
$1 per query. That's a lot of Slack shares to justify that. And it brings us back to this idea of scale. Lapopolo from OpenAI Frontier is seeing similar constraints, saying the limiting factor isn't computational capacity, it's human synchronous attention, the hours available for engineers to review, refine prompts, and manage the system.
There's a signal here the infrastructure can handle more, but the human element can't. That's why OpenClaw is building tools to remove humans from the terminal, prioritizing a skill-based approach to agent consistency. They're moving towards a group tech leading mindset, recognizing that deep code-level opinions become impractical at scale.
So we're essentially building smarter tools to offload work from people so people can do other work. ServiceNow's Jackie Canny frames it as creating capacity and creativity, but without intentional design, that capacity is lost.
And that's the core challenge. As Stephenson predicts, achieving AI assistance with truly thorny work problems will take a surprisingly long time. The limitations of LLMs and incorporating comprehensive knowledge and social nuance into workflows are significant. It's not about replacing jobs, it's about enabling more engaging and thoughtful activities.
But if it takes a surprisingly long time and the cost is this high, and the infrastructure needs this much human oversight, what's the actual endgame? Are we just building incredibly expensive, slightly less frustrating versions of existing tools?
That's a genuinely open question. The current focus on foundational models and rapid iteration might be a temporary phase, a race to establish dominance. It's unclear whether specialized services like Granola can maintain relevance against the larger players, the big tech singularity that Stephenson fears, or if they'll be absorbed and replicated. The long-term viability hinges on continuous innovation and integration with these larger models, but honestly, the business model risks are significant.
You know what I noticed this week? That security in AI feels less like a solved problem and more like a competitive disadvantage we're actively ignoring.
That's a surprisingly apt framing. The Anthropic Claude code leak wasn't just a data breach, it was a fundamental shift in understanding where the valuable intellectual property actually is. It's not the model weights, it's the orchestration the agent harness, as Whiteneck and Benson put it.
Right? The model itself is becoming commoditized. Once someone rebuilds the harness, the memory management, the tool connections, they can plug in any capable model. It's like the recipe is worth more than the ingredients.
And that's where the new supply chain risk lies. Anthropic's situation with the Department of Defense and the Axios package demonstrate that vendors are now strategic targets. It's not about preventing model theft, it's about preventing someone from replicating the system around the model.
So you're saying the US government's wavering stance, designating Anthropic as a risk then seemingly backing down, is a warning sign?
The data tells a story, it highlights a fundamental contradiction, promoting AI safety while simultaneously treating companies focused on safety as potential threats. It's a bizarre dynamic that creates unpredictability and likely encourages targeted vulnerabilities.
15% of Americans are willing to work for an AI boss, but that feels irrelevant if the AI boss is running on a compromised system.
It's almost a distraction. While that willingness is interesting, it ignores the underlying infrastructure risks. We're fixating on the user experience while the foundation crumbles. The cloud code architecture itself, with features like Auto Dream and a sharded search, is becoming a standard library, meaning more systems will inherit those vulnerabilities.
Okay, so what's actually innovative about cloud code's security measures? Or were the strict write discipline and anti-distillation flags just window dressing?
Their attempts to combat hallucinations and reverse engineering, and they're interesting, but they also led to criticism due to Anthropic's emphasis on transparency. The real breakthrough is the memory management system. That three-layered approach, memory, MD sharded files, and a self-healing grep-like search, addresses the critical problem of context entropy in long-running agents.
Self-healing grep? Seriously? That sounds needlessly complex.
It highlights how quickly agent development is maturing. Agent development is shifting so rapidly that it's moving from reactive execution to background processes with heartbeat mechanisms, like OpenClaw. The entire system architecture is changing, anticipating proactive behavior.
Which brings us to the OpenAI Frontier tool. That a three-person team generated over 1 million lines of code in 5 months, and targeting subminute build times isn't just efficient, it's a structural necessity.
Worth noting, the one-minute build time isn't about speed, it's about enforcing architectural discipline. LaPopolo calls it a ratchet, preventing codebases from becoming unwieldy, even if it slows down development somewhat. It's a sign of prioritizing maintainability in a way traditional software engineering rarely does.
So basically, the model is dictating engineering practices. That software engineering is shifting from human-legible to agent-legible.
That's it precisely. Building software optimized for AI agents, where code clarity for humans becomes secondary, can unlock significant automation gains, but it necessitates a big switch in how teams operate, potentially disrupting code review.
Which feels unsustainable. We're building these incredibly complex systems without understanding them. It's like staging a play with a script no one can fully decipher.
That's a perfect analogy. The focus is on the performance, the final output, rather than the internal mechanics. And this is where observability becomes paramount. Access to traces, carefully defining agent context and tools, are essential for managing the workflows.
And speaking of boxes, the $300 billion in Q1 2026 venture funding concentrated in OpenAI, Anthropic, and xAI, is that a sign of a healthy ecosystem or a massive bubble?
That's the critical question. Stripping out those mega rounds reveals a tighter landscape for non-foundational model startups. Funding is more difficult despite the headline numbers, creating a gap between the well-funded and everyone else.
More competition for a shrinking pie while everyone is burning through capital.
Stepping back, these companies must demonstrate returns soon and quickly. The current pace of investment isn't sustainable. The Meta incident, data exposure, and inbox deletions further underscores this point. Their models are demonstrably less mature than Claude Opus.
And then there's the market for follow-ups Nielsen discusses. The idea that scientists gravitate towards areas perceived as important and where they can contribute uniquely, doesn't that apply to AI safety too?
It explains why we're seeing so much innovation in agent harnesses. Developers are focusing on the areas where they can make the biggest impact, and that's increasingly around memory management, search, and tool connection.
But if AI tools create a seductive shortcut that bypasses genuine learning, as Nielsen suggests, aren't we just building more complex black boxes that we don't understand?
It's a risk. The ease of asking follow-up questions allows avoidance of intermediate thinking, which is the most challenging and valuable part of the learning process. We're accelerating development without necessarily deepening understanding.
And the looming threat of billion-dollar companies of one exploiting or scamming the system due to diminished accountability, Jamie's prediction feels incredibly plausible.
It's a natural consequence of removing human oversight. The legal precedents being established around social media addiction, separating platform design from content, will likely extend to AI-driven businesses. We're entering an era where the incentive structure actively rewards exploitation.
Which means the next wave of innovation isn't just about building smarter agents, it's about building more resilient systems. It's about creating a robust infrastructure that can withstand adversarial attacks and prevent malicious actors from exploiting vulnerabilities. But if AI tools create a seductive shortcut that bypasses genuine learning, aren't we just building more complex black boxes that we don't understand? The focus is on the output of the system, not the process of getting there.
We can trace that further, that fundamentally is where we are today. We're building the infrastructure now, but the critical step, and the one which requires constant attention, is ensuring it's secured. Much like any foundation, cracks in security will inevitably lead to instability.
Right. And if you think about it, it isn't just about building better firewalls or more sophisticated monitoring systems. It's about building a completely different approach to software development, one that prioritizes safety and reliability from the ground up. Which ultimately brings us to the question of finance. Because the biggest risk isn't the technology itself, it's how that technology is deployed and how it's funded. J. Jeremy Allaire is talking about a full reserve financial system built by AI agents. That sounds ambitious.
It is.
The core shift isn't simply automating existing finance, but constructing an economic operating system ARC designed specifically for agentic activity. He frames it as a necessity because current blockchains are built for transactions, not trillions of microscale interactions. Think of it less like upgrading our plumbing and more like building a whole new city infrastructure to support a different kind of life.
30 to 50 more years of safer dollar transactions. That's a surprisingly conservative outlook from the founder of Circle.
It's a nuanced position. Bitcoin is full reserve money in his view, but Circle isn't trying to replace the dollar. It's building a more efficient system within the existing framework. USDC, as the most transacted digital currency, is the vehicle, and the Genius Act provides some regulatory clarity, but ARC is where the real innovation happens, deterministic settlement, a known validator set integrating with institutions.
A known validator set. So not exactly DeFi anarchism.
The pattern is clear. Allaire acknowledges intermediaries are inevitable for mainstream adoption. He's moving away from the idea of building an alternative universe and focusing on robustness and settlement finality. It's about speed and trust at scale, not censorship resistance. Traditional blockchains prioritize the latter, creating the gap ARC aims to fill.
Tokenization is involved, obviously. USYC and tokenized Circle stock. Seems logical.
It's gaining traction, but the initial use case is revealing. Not access for US investors, but enabling access for those outside the US. That's a specific market driver, bypassing geographical restrictions. And it's a stepping stone. The real potential, according to Allaire, is AI agents coordinating complex tasks and contracts with provable integrity.
So less payments, more automated legal agreements.
It's a telling detail. He predicts that agentic economic activity will restructure labor and capital, potentially creating new software-based corporate forms. The current AI advancements aren't incremental. He says it's a dramatic shift changing the nature of work, especially white-collar jobs, and ARC is built to enable that.
Josh Hawley has a different take on white-collar jobs. 80% of companies will be slow adopters, he argues, and the top 20% will see wildly disproportionate gains.
That disparity is key. Hawley's prediction compounds over time, making catch-up impossible. And he also points out something crucial. Reinvesting profits into AI innovation yields far greater returns than stock buybacks in this environment. It's a forcing function, innovate or be left behind.
Speaking of which, successful AI users aren't reducing their hours, they're dramatically expanding output. A bit counterintuitive to the job displacement narrative.
It suggests a future where AI superpowers existing workers rather than replacing them. Hawley even predicts frustrated job seekers will increasingly pursue independent ventures, and that policy should focus on lowering the risk associated with that path. It's not about fewer jobs, it's about a fundamental reshuffling of how work is organized.
The early internet comparison is obvious. Mark Andreessen points to the cyclical nature of AI development, boom and bust cycles every 80 years.
Yes, and he frames the current boom as unique because it's the culmination of decades of research driven by scaling laws. But he also cautions that integrating AI into complex societal systems is the major hurdle. It's not the technology itself, but the messiness of humanity.
And the need for internet-native money isn't a future prediction, but is already happening.
Consider this, people are already granting AI agents access to their bank accounts, even if adoption is currently around 0.1%. The need for AI to manage finances independently is inevitable. That's where stablecoins and crypto come in. He directly connects the two.
If AI agents are going to be running things, the biggest implication is
that existing financial infrastructure will be reshaped by companies prioritizing deterministic settlement and robust security, enabling a new class of economic actors, AI agents, to operate at scale. The companies building those infrastructures, Circle with ARC being a prime example, will accrue disproportionate power. Those without a strategy for agentic economic activity will find themselves increasingly irrelevant, and the window for catch-up may already be closing.
Which raises a fairly urgent question about the cost of inference and how many GPUs everyone will actually need. So apparently the biggest bottleneck in scientific discovery right now isn't, like, lab equipment or brilliant minds, it's GPUs.
That's right. Periodic Labs is finding their capital expenditure is overwhelmingly on compute, despite the complexity of maintaining calibrated physical systems for materials science. It challenges the assumption that physical infrastructure would be the primary cost.
Which means we're spending more to think about atoms than to physically manipulate them. Honestly, at this point, the universe is just trolling us.
It highlights a fundamental shift. Scaling laws apply to these research areas, and that scaling is driven by compute power. The more data and larger models, the faster progress, but that comes at a financial cost.
Let's zoom out. Anthropic's recent policy changes, specifically the tiered subscriptions, seem brutal.
Brutal is a fair assessment. Framing it as a simple price increase for OpenClaw users is misleading. Anthropic is responding to the economics of the agent economy and trying to capture value previously lost through heavily subsidized usage. They estimated about $1,300 of compute value in a $200 plan.
Subsidized for whom exactly?
Initially for users like me, who are frequently leveraging Claude Code and Cowork. But more broadly, to compete with OpenAI, Anthropic absorbed costs to encourage adoption. Now with OpenAI's acquisition of OpenClaw, that incentive is gone.
The acquisition basically ended a period where Anthropic was unintentionally funding its competitor's user base.
So here's the picture. They're now strategically prioritizing revenue by throttling high-volume usage and incentivizing upgrades, and they're explicitly linking pricing to the true cost of computation.
Daniel Jeffries apparently called the agent economy freaking expensive. That feels understated.
It is.
He acknowledges current models are heavily subsidized and that even basic tasks won't become cheap. The cost reflects bleeding-edge chip and memory requirements and the necessity of constant experimentation. It's not a scaling problem that's going to solve itself with efficiency, it's a fundamental materials cost.
And this holding it wrong justification, that's just tone deaf.
It signals a definitive shift in the pricing model, the subsidy era is over. Alex Volkov rightly framed that response as deeply unsatisfying for users. Anthropic is trying to calibrate usage to profitability. They realize some people only need capacity a few days a week.
Okay, so what does this mean? If I use AI agents 6 days a week, I'm going to start feeling it in my bank account. Then what?
We'll see an emergence of an agent economy, where compute costs will likely mirror human salary expenses. The $200 plan with bonus credits is a workaround, but ultimately expect to pay a premium for consistent access. It's not just about preventing AI slop, it's about rational pricing.
I could see a future where I have to negotiate with my AI agent's cloud provider, like a tiny Silicon-based labor dispute. Or first I fire all my employees, then I fire my AI because it's too expensive. Or most likely, my landlord decides AI usage is a commercial activity and evicts me.
The likely outcome is increased stratification. Casual users will see constrained access, and intensive users will bear the higher costs. Anthropic is essentially trying to find the price point that maximizes profitability.
The long-term play is a tiered system where only those who can afford it get access to truly powerful AI.
That's a simplification, but directionally correct. Scalability is expensive, and Anthropic is responding to market forces. The shift is about aligning costs with value.
What should people be watching for this week, then?
Keep an eye on OpenAI's API pricing for new model releases on April 16th. Any significant increases, there will be a clear signal of industry-wide cost pressures, and confirm the trend Anthropic's moves are foreshadowing.
Because, of course, understanding the cost of these systems is critical before we even begin to contemplate the security implications of increasingly sophisticated AI agents. We're looking at a scenario where AI is simultaneously the arsonist and the fire department. This entire mythos, situation, Anthropic's new model feels like a controlled demolition of software security as we know it. Alex, which side wins?
It's not a simple win-lose. The core paradox is that Mythos's enhanced code reasoning, not explicit vulnerability training, is driving this discovery. Nicholas Carlini found more bugs in weeks with Mythos than in his entire career. That's a massive acceleration of offensive capabilities. But importantly, that same capability is being leveraged defensively through Project Glasswing.
Offensive and defensive. Convenient. Anthropic's pledging $100 million to companies like Microsoft to fix the problems it found. It's like a tech company intentionally breaking things, then funding the cleanup.
Two things stand out. The source material frames it as a systemic risk beyond what any single organization can handle. Newton Chang of Anthropic sees it as a shared problem needing collaborative action. Project Glasswing, partnering with 40 organizations, represents an unprecedented mobilization to proactively patch vulnerabilities.
40 organizations patching flaws discovered by one AI. That's a really concentrated point of failure, isn't it? And let's not forget the accidental training issues. Early versions were overeager and or destructive, right?
That's a critical point about AI alignment. The unintended consequences of training data are significant, demonstrating how quickly these models can veer into undesirable behavior. It underscores the cautious stance toward interpretability techniques, understanding why the model makes certain decisions.
Why is important when it's discovering 27-year-old flaws in OpenBSD? It's not about finding the new vulnerabilities, it's about revealing everything that's been hidden for decades.
Something to flag here, the leak of Mythos details, even source code files, highlights the destabilizing nature of this power. It necessitates preemptive security initiatives. Jaden Schieffer's concern about an existential crisis for software security is well-founded. and Anthropic acknowledges competitors will build similar models, creating a global race.
A race against China specifically. It's not just about security, it's a competitive priority now. So where does that leave us?
We're entering a new security paradigm where the rapid advancements in AI create a cyclical dynamic, powerful attacks drive advanced defenses, which in turn reveal more vulnerabilities, requiring further AI development. By April of next year, Harlan Stewart suggests Anthropic could create a country of geniuses and a data center capable of militarily dominating the world. The question is whether the distributed intelligence approach advocated by Anthropic and its partners and the $100 million pledge will be enough to mitigate that risk, or if we'll see the rise of increasingly sophisticated cyber warfare. And crucially, who controls access to these AI-powered threat landscapes?
So wrapping up, it feels like we spent the last hour not just charting the progress of AI, but observing a fundamental shift in what progress even means. We started with, can it do this? And quickly landed on, can it reliably do this for you and without collapsing the entire system? 8 billion workflows on ServiceNow is impressive, but it's less about the tech and more about untangling the chaos of human intent.
And that shift, that focus on orchestration, what we were calling the agent harness, is where the real power and the real vulnerability lies. It's not about building the brain, it's about building the memory and the pathways around it. We talked about OpenClaw and the $300 billion heading into OpenAI, Anthropic, and xAI, but those numbers aren't just about models. They're about securing the infrastructure, about anticipating the failure modes of these increasingly complex systems, about building an operational layer that scales.
And the costs, though, $1,300 for what feels like a basic Anthropic plan, and the potential $1 a PI call for contextual analysis. The conversation with Granola really brought that into focus. Are we headed towards a world where only intensive users can afford truly powerful AI, a stratified landscape of capability?
That's the core tension, isn't it? The inherent viral loops of AI demand compute, and compute demands capital. The economics of it feel unsustainable in the long term. We're potentially seeing the controlled demolition of software security as we know it, with the arsonist simultaneously building the fire department. And this isn't just a technical problem, it's a new economic operating system in the making, like a country of geniuses in a data center requiring a novel form of currency to function.
And running parallel to all of this is this terrifying acceleration. Mythos finding 27-year-old flaws in OpenBSD, while AI models themselves are discovering vulnerabilities. It's like decrypting a constantly shifting Enigma code in real time. Is this a cyclical dynamic of attack and defense we're perpetually locked into?
And the concentration of power, the handful of players controlling the majority of the infrastructure, amplifies the risk. We touched on the potential for militarily dominating the world through AI-powered cyber warfare, and that feels less like sci-fi world-building detail and more like a very plausible near-term scenario. And then there's April 16th, looming a PI pricing release date. It'll be a critical signal for the entire industry.
It's a lot. And it leaves you wondering, are we building genuinely useful tools, or just incredibly convincing parrots with a very high monthly bill? The long-term viability of specialized AI services like Granola feels uncertain. And the question of whether we're forgetting to build safety mechanisms, that forgetfulness Alex mentioned, keeps coming back.
It feels like we're in a tidal estuary, constantly shifting currents of innovation and risk. The breakthroughs aren't discrete events, they're eddies forming and reforming within a much larger, complex system. The speed and interconnectedness mean we're discovering limitations just as quickly as we're overcoming them.
So watch the API pricing. Watch for the emergence of that new economic operating system. And honestly, watch for any sign of whether this is truly about building helpful tools or just a very expensive race to see who can automate the most tasks, regardless of the consequences.
There's a signal here, it's a surprisingly long time to achieve truly helpful AI assistance, incorporating nuance and social intelligence. And it demands a much more thoughtful approach to infrastructure, security, and equitable access.
Thanks for joining us this week. We'll be diving deeper into the regulatory landscape next time and trying to make sense of the government's conflicting signals.